Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello and welcome to the EAN Cast, Weekly Neurology, the weekly audio podcast by EAN. My name is Anne Pavillot-Troyon. I'm a neurologist at the University Hospital of Toulouse, France, and head of the Autonomic Lab. I'm also co-chair of the EAN Autonomic Disorders Panel and member of the EFAS, European Federation of Autonomic Societies. The month's topic is autonomic disorders, and in today's episode, we will talk about post-COVID autonomic dysfunction. The aim is to understand the impact of COVID infection on the autonomic nervous system. I have two guests today. The first is Diogo Reis Carneiro, who is a neurologist working in Coimbra, Portugal. Diogo teaches human anatomy at the Faculty of Medicine. He received training in autonomic nervous system disorder in Innsbruck and in movement disorders in Paris. He is a member of the EAN Education Committee. My other guest is Fabian Less, who is a clinical research fellow at the Division of Neurobiology of the Neurology Department at the Medical University of Innsbruck. And Fabian has a particular interest in autonomic disorders occurring in alpha synucleinopathies and in post-COVID. So welcome to both of you, and thank you for joining us today. Let us start. So we know that COVID may induce autonomic disorders. Could you tell us what are the main autonomic symptoms caused by COVID?
Hi, welcome also from my side, and thank you for the invitation to do this podcast. So if we are talking about post-COVID autonomic complaints, I think if we break it down, most people perceive damage or affection of the cardiovascular autonomic domain. And to bring it down on one big common denominator, most people perceive and explain to us symptoms of orthostatic intolerance. And most commonly, I guess this would be lightheadedness, dizziness, and also very common since COVID, the so-called brain fog. Apart from that, what we also see very often in our clinic is that people complain about heat intolerance or cold intolerance, the latter a little bit less often. And this is what we believe is to a damage to the pseudomotor autonomic domain with affection of the small nerve fibers, causing pseudomotor dysfunction. And people often complain about a hyperhidrosis, which is more located on the stem, on the body. And while they actually have the damage on the small fibers in the periphery on their extremities, and the compensatory sweating on the chest is what they perceive as unpleasant. But in fact, they have peripheral damage to the peripheral fibers.
So after the COVID infection, many patients are suffering from long COVID. So can you tell us what are the main abnormalities of this post-COVID and also after how to manage them?
Sure. As Fabian mentioned, long COVID has a lot of aspects that relate with the autonomic nervous system, including and in particular cardiovascular ANS. So a lot of symptoms suggest this dysregulation. The cardiovascular dysfunction after COVID appears to arise from malfunctioning autonomic control of circulation with failure or inadequate or excessive activation of the sympathetic or parasympathetic components of the autonomic nervous system. And in addition, there might be an inflammatory mechanism with microvascular endothelial dysfunction. So, of course, there is a significant interest in exploring the autonomic nervous system in these patients. The post-COVID orthostatic intolerance has a lot of overlap with the POTS diagnosis, the postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, and would ideally be explored in the same clinical approach we use for POTS with a thorough anamnesis, physical examination, and a Shellong test, the orthostatic stress test, with blood pressure and heart rate measurements. This test, in the case of POTS, may be extended until or up to 10 minutes to get the full picture of the tachycardia and the symptoms. And, well, more or less the same applies for the orthostatic hypotension that is also characteristic of the long COVID. If we need to extend the evaluation of these patients, we can also use long-term electrocardiogram and blood pressure monitoring that may be very useful. And as a third step, if doubts remain, the autonomic lab tests with the beat-to-beat, the continuous measurement of blood pressure and heart rate, and the performance of several maneuvers like the Valsalva, the deep breathing, and using the head-up tilt table testing, all of these may be useful to better characterize the symptoms. Well, so this is the study, the most of the occasions as a protocol that most labs, most outpatient clinics of the autonomic nervous system use to investigate also the long COVID complaints.
Thank you. And can you tell us how you can manage these people? What kind of recommendation you can give them? And what kind of treatment maybe you can also propose?
Of course, because it is very interesting because with COVID, that there was a lot of awareness about these symptoms and previous disorders of autonomic nervous systems that did not get enough attention. So there is also a lot of misinformation. And I believe that the diagnosis starts precisely with a correct diagnosis and patient education. So this is of paramount importance for the people so that patients do not get confused. This is transversal to all of these disorders. Then we can divide always in between non-pharmacological and pharmacological measures. For example, in the case of POTS and post-COVID orthostatic intolerance, general measures include, for example, fluid, salt intake, compression stockings, and also exercises of physical reconditioning that are tailored to the patient possibilities. On the other side, the pharmacological interventions aimed at to target the heart rate control, the blood volume expansion, to promote vasoconstriction, venoconstriction, and to reduce the hyperadrenergic drive. So these may include the beta blockers to the heart rate, the fludrocortisone to increase blood volume, among other medications. On the other side, for example, for the orthostatic hypotension, we also need the adequate hydration, the carefulness with the positional changes that must be ideally slow and cautious. Then we have to check all the medication, namely the hypotensive medication that may need to be removed. Also the compressing stockings, the abdominal binders would help patients. Avoiding alcohol, also small and frequent meals. So all of these non-pharmacological care, dietetic aspects that are useful for all types of orthostatic hypotension. We may also pay attention to the supine hypertension, which is mostly recognized in Parkinsonian syndromes. And then the head of the bed may be a little bit elevated during night. To treat, we can also use fludrocortisone, but also midodrine, pyridostigmine, atomoxetine, or even droxidopa, which is not available in Europe, unfortunately. Then most of the things like the gastrointestinal issues or thermoregulatory issues do not have a direct medication, direct specific strategies. So is mostly symptomatic.
Thank you. And do you have an idea of the duration of this symptom? It's not a tricky question because people ask about the duration of the symptoms. So now COVID was years ago. Do you have an idea of the duration of the symptoms or not?
Yes, so if I can take on this question, this is a very good and interesting one, because we experienced this in our outpatient clinic. There are, so to say, a part of the patients who are the more lucky ones, who come to us, have their autonomic assessment on the tilt table, on the CureSight examination, and with all the further cardiovascular reflex testing, like Diogo mentioned. And then they have all these assessments. And then due to the high demand for our outpatient ward in the COVID times, they will have their appointment in 2, 3, or in really highly demanding times, 6 weeks later. And when we saw those people, some lucky ones of them have already felt a great relief in their symptomatic burden. So after time, this got better and better. And these are, in my experience, those patients where we do not see any affection of small fibers. And then the other ones, the unlucky patients, are, so to say, those who have a pathological CureSight where we see a diffuse pseudomotor dysfunction next to their cardiovascular autonomic abnormalities. And those are the people who stay until today in our outpatient clinic, coming with only reporting slowly improvement. And for those people, when I compare it to our other patients, which always had the fear of the summer when the heat is increasing and they have a much bigger symptomatic burden, for those post-COVID patients, they have another high risk, which is the winter time, in which they will have a higher risk to get another infection, another COVID infection or another respiratory infect, and have their symptoms exacerbated once more. I've just seen two patients in our outpatient clinic. They had their 6 months control within the last medical report. The last time we saw them, they reported a slightly improvement or even a moderate improvement of their symptoms. And they were coming. I wasn't even sure if they would come, because this was 6 months ago and they reported an improvement. And they came with a worsening, and both of them reported another respiratory infect. And the other one reported again a COVID-19 infection. And so this is unfortunately what we see in our outpatient clinic.
Thank you. So do you think it's important in this patient to look for small fiber neuropathy systematically?
I think it is, because it's a way for us to quantify if there's damage to the autonomic fibers. And the CureSight is an easy way. It's not very accessible, but for dedicated autonomic centers, like here in Innsbruck, we have the opportunity to do this and quantify to assess whether there are abnormalities to the small fibers. So if possible, I would suggest to do this if there is any clinical hint for a small fiber neuropathy.
So do you have an idea of the prevalence of the post-COVID in Europe? A rough idea? I know it's a difficult question, but maybe you have some idea.
Well, I think it is a little bit difficult to say, to have the exact figures, because maybe there are a lot of non-diagnosed individuals. But according to recent reviews, at least 1/3 of the highly symptomatic patients may be affected by POTS or other form of cardiovascular autonomic dysfunction after the COVID infection.
I think Diogo has the right answer. Most of the patients we are seeing are POTS patients, post-COVID POTS patients, and also patients with inappropriate sinus tachycardia is what we often see here. On the other side, we also see people which have their orthostatic, their pre-existing cardiovascular autonomic disorders exacerbated or demasked by a COVID infection. And I think to mention here are vasovagal syncopes, which got on rose in the post-COVID and acute COVID times.
Okay. I have another question. Do you think that COVID has changed the way we manage patients with autonomic disorders? Because we use video conference, we use other means. So do you think that you have changed your way to manage the patients with autonomic disorders?
I think like the treatment approach is, as Diogo mentioned before, is on most parts the same. In a way, we try to start with non-pharmacological measures in people where this is all right, because their symptomatic burden is somewhat in the middle or in the lower impairment area, or if they have a much higher impairment, also start with pharmacological treatment. But in most cases, it will be to start with the non-pharmacological measures, and then if needed, to increase them, to add pharmacological agents. Otherwise, in the general approach to assess these people, we here in Innsbruck have adapted our protocols for the special post-COVID case, in which we try to expand our tilt table protocol. This is not a full syncope protocol, but we extended the tilt phase to also observe if there are syncopes in those POTS, mainly POTS patients. And what also came with COVID was the possibility to have telemedicine approaches to see those people who have such a high symptomatic burden, who can't come to our hospital or were afraid to come to our hospital because of the risk of an infection, that we are now able to see those patients online and counsel them.
In addition, I think that there is an increased perception of these symptoms by the general population, but also by the medical community. So this increased awareness, maybe in the future, will also promote the increase of referrals to the autonomic centers. There are some changes, not directly to the patient management, but in terms of healthcare organization, also research that has been focused to the COVID aspects in some centers, also regarding the education, which is mostly done by online, in an online format, actually. So a lot of stuff changed.
Thank you so much to both of you.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity to speak here.
So thank you so much to the audience for listening. And we will wait for the next podcast on autonomic disorders.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EAN Cast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.